Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
It's Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, and this is Markets Daily. I'm Helene Braun, markets reporter at CoinDesk. Let's have a look at today's prices. According to CoinDesk indices at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, Bitcoin rose over 1% in the past 24 hours, trading above $73,000. Ether continued to hold above the 4K level, and the crypto industry is watching for the much-anticipated Dankun upgrade, with some analysts concerned about a price correction following the event. Assets in the CoinDesk 20 were mixed on the day, with Avalanche as the top gainer. In traditional markets, both the Nasdaq and the S&P 500 rose more than a percent in yesterday's trading, as markets shrugged off a hotter-than-expected February inflation reading. And in commodities, the Brent crude oil benchmark was trading above $83 a barrel. Meanwhile, gold was trading at $2,172 an ounce. For more on the market's action, let's bring in Brian Dixon, CEO of Off the Chain Capital. Brian, Bitcoin can't seem to catch a break here. It's been trading above $70,000 for quite a few days now. This morning, it hit another all-time high of $73,678. In addition to the overall positive sentiment in the industry right now, I'm sure some of that price action is in anticipation of the halving. Do you expect to see lower levels after April?
So I think that we'll probably see some drawbacks at different points in time throughout this next cycle, but I think we're going to be going up from where we're at right now largely. Now, if we think about the halving that's going to occur next month, as of today, there's 900 Bitcoin produced by the network each day. When the halving occurs in late April, that's going to get cut in half to 450 Bitcoin that'll be produced each day. And if we look at the tremendous demand from the Bitcoin ETFs, we're already seeing that drive a price appreciation. So as of right now, there is 10 to 15 times more daily demand we've seen over the last couple of weeks through the Bitcoin ETFs than there is daily supply created by the network. I know yesterday there was net inflows of over $1 billion with the Bitcoin ETFs, but the Bitcoin network only created $65 million worth of new Bitcoin into circulation. So that's 15 times more demand in one day than the daily supply. And so as long as this demand continues, I believe when we enter the halving next month and that gets cut in half in terms of the Bitcoin being produced into circulation each day, that's really going to continue to drive price appreciation.
So, of course, probably the biggest story in crypto today is the Dankun upgrade. How significant is the upgrade in your opinion, and what price action do you expect to see after the upgrade today?
So I think it's a very important milestone for the Ethereum network, because one of the biggest challenges Ethereum's had for quite some time is the scalability and the cost of gas fees for transactions. And other competitors like Solana are really gaining a lot of market share on Ethereum because the user experience is not pricing out the retail investor from doing transactions, because Solana is very efficient and more cost effective. And so if Ethereum is able to move through this and accomplish this successfully, I think it will add value to the network. In terms of price with Ethereum right now, I don't really see the upgrade as much of a price driver as I do the anticipation of an Ethereum ETF. I think a lot of people are loading up on Ethereum, expecting it to have a similar impact that Bitcoin did whenever the Bitcoin ETF was passed, because there was tremendous price appreciation. And I think there's a lot more people that are allocating for that reason. But I do think there is a percentage that are expecting the upgrade to be really beneficial as well.
So speaking of the potential ETH ETF, a listener wrote in to ask about the potential rejection by the SEC against the ETF. And, you know, there's been some chatter this week that the ETF might not happen after all, given that there hasn't really been any noise around it from the SEC. And, you know, the deadline is in 2 months, which isn't that far away. So say an ETH ETF doesn't get approved or, you know, is likely not happening anytime soon. How big of a negative impact is this going to have on ETH?
I think it would be some short-term volatility and probably a minimal drawdown on it. But I do think eventually in the long term, an Ethereum ETF will be approved. I think one of the things that's probably going through the heads of the regulators right now is there seems to be a little bit of a turf war over who's going to govern Ethereum, whether that's a security or whether that's a commodity. And if we look historically, it took a very long time for the Bitcoin ETF to get approved. And a lot of people in the market will note that now that we have a Bitcoin ETF, there's better precedent to approve an Ethereum ETF. And I would agree with that. But I think on the flip side, you also have to think that the Bitcoin ETF was not approved easily, right? Like Grayscale had to go in and actually pursue litigation against the SEC to get them to go back and reconsider their Bitcoin ETF filing. And I think that was a huge positive for the industry when they won that case, being able to get that approved. And so if we see any type of history repeat itself in terms of the delays in getting an ETF approval, I wouldn't be surprised if the SEC continued to delay a decision on that.
Global crypto regulation, the disruptive power of AI, the rise of tokenization. Consensus is the one event where experts convene to talk about the ideas shaping our digital future. Join developers, investors, founders, brands, policymakers, and plenty more in Austin, Texas from May 29th to the 31st. The 10th annual Consensus is curated by CoinDesk to feature the industry's most sought-after speakers, unparalleled networking opportunities, and unforgettable experiences. Take 15% off with this registration code, MD15. Register now at consensus.coindesk.com.
Speaking of Grayscale for a second here and Bitcoin ETFs, Grayscale yesterday filed for a mini GBTC fund that, in my understanding, the main difference is that this new fund has lower management fees, which GBTC has a very high fee at 1.5%, which is much, much higher than its competitors. Why wouldn't they just lower the fees on GBTC?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is that the existing product is the largest Bitcoin fund in the world, the most longstanding fund being managed by a crypto native firm, right? It's not a traditional asset manager coming in, launching a new crypto product. This is somebody that's been in the space for a very long time. Another thing is that if you're a trader and you want to go in and trade, you want to go into the deepest and most liquid market because that's going to minimize the amount of slippage that you're going to have for executing a transaction. And there's some times where if it's not a deep and liquid market like Grayscale's is, that the amount of slippage that could occur from a transaction could actually exceed the 1.5% fee that Grayscale is charging. So a trader may want to go into the existing GBTC product for short-term trading purposes because they could execute a transaction and create better price on their execution. And that could actually command a premium on the price for the fees with Grayscale. I also think Grayscale looks at itself as it has this long-term premium brand in the space and that it believes it can charge a 1.5% fee on this particular product. And I believe the reason they're launching this new product is because they also want to have a competitive product with new entrants to the market. And so by putting a new product out, and I'm assuming we'll have much lower fee structure, we just don't know yet, that will be able to leverage their brand to then attract new AUM for a similar product while also continuing to have this much larger scale product on the market.
So I want to go back to markets here for a second, and specifically the macro environment. Ken Griffin yesterday said on a panel that the Fed should be careful about lowering interest rates too quickly, especially given the most recent CPI report that showed that inflation picked up again. Do you agree with that? And how much are lower rates priced in right now?
So in my opinion, the whole raising and lowering of interest rates is a rather big illusion to the public because whenever you actually get the reported inflation numbers, they're excluding key data points such as food and energy. Well, what's the one thing the entire US economy uses every day? Food and energy, right? So by removing these data points from reported inflation, we're never getting an accurate picture of what inflation really looks like. And it's always significantly higher, in my opinion, than what's ever reported. And so as they do this illusionary game of raising and lowering interest rates, they raise them and then it's going to slow down spending because borrowing capital becomes more expensive. And then they lower them to increase spending to create more economic activity. And to me, it's just a very short-term illusion that doesn't fix the long-term issue, because if it was really fixing inflation, I'd still be paying 70 cents for a gallon of gas like I did when I was 16 years old, right? And so with that, I do think they've raised them really high because the spending was out of control. And I think what Ken Griffin is saying is he doesn't want them to lower them too quickly and then have to re-raise them, because that could create like an economic whiplash. And I understand his point of view there. I do think that the rates have been high for a period of time now, and they're probably going to start creeping down. I don't know how quickly, but I do think we're reaching a point where they need to start coming down a little bit because they need to start stimulating more economic activity. But what really needs to get put in check is the government spending.
So besides government spending and inflation, are there any other macro factors that you think crypto traders should be watching, or are those the main two that are important for crypto markets?
So I think the spending is a huge one, because the more money that's going to be spent, the more likely it is that I think the digital asset ecosystem will thrive over time. Other macro factors, I think it really depends on the asset that you're looking at. So definitely government spending, the way that central banks and governments are operating around the world is going to have a lot of impact on Bitcoin, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If we're looking at some of the other digital assets, like some of the smart contracting platforms from a macro perspective, I would look much more into how other countries are developing on these protocols, because that's really interesting to me, because when you see things concentrated in a certain area for development of some of these protocols, it may not be as decentralized as we would like it to be. But the more community adoption we have through different jurisdictions around the world, I think that's another very interesting thing to pay attention to. And through that, there's going to be legal and regulatory implications for that as well that have to be worked through. And so I would pay very close attention to the regulatory landscape as well. I know specific to the United States, we have the stablecoin bill that's been working its way through the legislature, and we have the market structure bill for crypto. Those are two very, very important things. Give us a much better understanding of the sandbox that everyone's playing in, so these entrepreneurs know how to build and operate more effectively.
So I want to talk about Coinbase briefly, who has been in the news in the past few weeks, and, you know, not in a good way necessarily, because during the several rallies that Bitcoin saw over the past month, Coinbase crashed multiple times. Now, I've heard some of my sources say that they've built these sort of crashes into their system, that they basically anticipate that because it's happened so many times before. But what's your take on that?
So I don't know if they build the crashes into the system. If that's true.
I mean, market makers build the crashes their system. Yeah.
Understood. Sorry, I misunderstood the question. So I don't know the answer to that. I think what my opinion is on it is, if we look historically with Coinbase, in May of 2020, which was the last Bitcoin halving, Coinbase crashed soon after that. And so what that tells me is they're having a huge influx of customer demand, and their system has been unable to handle it. And they probably did a ton of software work to fix those issues after it happened in 2020. And to see it happening again means they're probably having a multitude more of customer demand with institutions and retail investors on the platform. And what we saw last time Coinbase crashed, it was right around the time that started the last crypto bull cycle that happened for 12 to 18 months post-halving cycle. And we have the halving next month. We're seeing Coinbase crash multiple times over the last couple weeks. And so the question that's interesting to me is this signaling an indicator of the next crypto bull cycle that may happen throughout the next 12 to 18 months?
Wow, who would have thought that this could, you know, potentially be a good thing? All right, thanks for coming on, Brian.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Brian Dixon, CEO of Off the Chain Capital. That's it for today's show.
For more interviews and macro news on the digital asset space, check out CoinDesk's First Mover, also hosted by me, Jen Snassy. Markets Daily is produced and edited by Eleanor Paul, alongside senior booking producer Melissa Montanez and executive producer Jared Schwartz. I'm your host, Jen Snassy. We'll be back tomorrow with more Markets Daily.